It's better over here.
After investing billions to light up our network, T-Mobile is America's largest 5G network. Plus, right now, you can switch, keep your phone, and we'll pay it off up to $800. See how you can save on every plan versus Verizon and AT&T at T-Mobile.com/keep and switch.
Up to 4 lines via virtual prepaid card. Allow 15 days. Qualifying unlocked device, credit, service, ported 90 plus days with device and eligible carrier and timely redemption required. Card has no cash access and expires in 6 months.
I'm Jed Lipinski. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, fellas, the drive is live on a Reaction Monday. Sadly, it is not a Victory Monday and not a Mad Dog Monday. That would have been a nice taste to have today.
Yeah, wouldn't it, though?
It would have been. I thought it was going to happen. Tyler, I thought he was going to have to wash his shirt again, and he did not. Let's jump into this thing. D'Amico Ryan's coming up. We will carry it live. We expect to hear him around 2:30, so there's a programming note for you to check out. The head coach, we'll hear him after he's had a little time to look at the film, get home, and we'll hear his thoughts coming up around 2:30. Clint and Tyler will have that right here for you on the drive. All right, there's a lot to get to, and I'm sure you as the first person at the station, you and Sean Pendergast, able to talk about this as soon as this thing was over yesterday. I just want to kind of start here, and the people, you can jump in with this as well, 713-572-4610, those of you on YouTube and Twitch. Did this game at all shift how you view the Texans? Did this game at all view how you view the Texans? Did it shift your thinking on how you view the Texans? Because it feels like a last week was the Super Bowl contenders. It feels it. We saw what they did against the Patriots. They ran the football. We saw it with Joe Mixon back, and then obviously this was a tough fail. Did this shift at all how you viewed the Texans?
Yes. I'm done with the Texans are a Super Bowl contender roller coaster. I'm off of it. I've been on that roller coaster this year multiple times. It's been hilly, peaks and valleys. I'm completely off of it at this point. I'm through with that conversation. And it's for two reasons. Really, the best two teams that we've seen them play are out of the same division, the best division in football, the Green Bay Packers and the Minnesota Vikings. And had Jordan Love not decided to turn it over twice, and had the punt returner turnover on special teams on the punt return, if that wouldn't have happened, this game would have been as lopsided as the Minnesota game. And so the two best opponents that have been on the schedule so far, I think have proven, one with the scoreboard and the team, but this one, as I'm watching that game, there was one team that is across the board better than the other, and that was the Green Bay Packers. So just those two games and what they mean, the outcome, if you watch both of them, as well as, Ron, for me, the second thing is I thought the Texans were beyond being bullied or smothered, or smothered is probably the better, more accurate word. The same thing that Baltimore did last year in the playoffs to this offense is exactly what the Green Bay Packers were able to do on Sunday. I thought we were beyond that, and the fact that we're not, it's hard for me to think that this team can make a run versus four good to great defenses and legitimately win a Super Bowl. So that's my two big reasons for getting off the roller coaster right now. That's the two I got for you.
Would that have changed had he not made that field goal at the end? If they'd have won that game, would you still be saying this?
Oh, I don't know. They didn't win it. They lost it.
Okay. That's interesting. I'm seeing people here, as I said, has this game shifted your view of the Texans? Some people coming in right now, someone said no, Ron, then said agreeing with you, Clint. I'm off the contender train, too. No true contender has a pathetic O-line like this. Yes, I thought our offensive line was a strength of our team, I don't want to hear anything about Elite when talking about Tunsil. He's overrated. Clint is going wild. I don't know if that is a positive or a negative for that person. That's interesting to me. I you know, before I give my thought, I'm interested. Tyler, where are you at on that statement, Tyler? Where are you at on that thought? Did this game shift how you view the Texans?
The short answer, yes.
It did.
Yes. But maybe not to the degree that Clint just laid out for him. And maybe this is a fault of my own, but I keep in mind just no Nico, that whole deal. And like, what? Go ahead.
I just gonna say, because from you guys, and I'm seeing this on the Texans, obviously I saw this a lot on Texans Twitter, but I came away feeling better about the Texans.
Interesting.
I came away, there are some problems, and there are some problems that we thought they had. For them to be in that game, and yeah, they turned the ball over, but the Texans, outside of the punt, the Texans forced those turnovers. A hell of a play by Bullock, and that was a hell of a play by Petrie and Neville Hewitt. They forced those turnovers. For them to find a way to be in that game without their linebacking core, without their second corner, and Lord knows that was a problem, but without, what, 5-6 starters on defense, no Nico Collins, and for them to be in that game and have the lead with 3 seconds left on the clock, I mean, I don't know. I looked at that, and as I said last week, I feel like the Texans are a year away from really being a Super Bowl contender. So from that point, but I don't feel any different. I feel better about them for them to play on the road at Lambeau against, I think, a contender. And for it to come to that with everything they were dealing with CJ throwing for 86 yards and with, like, I don't know, man. I watched that game and I was like, hey, man, the Texans, they showed that culture stuff is real to even be in that game. So that is intriguing, or not intriguing, but interesting to see the faults from others to shift from beating the Patriots and feeling like they're a Super Bowl contender and then coming into this game shorthanded, like, I mean, really shorthanded, and losing at the buzzer when you had the lead. That's interesting to me.
Yeah, it's easy for me. It's easy to get there at this point. I mean, I'm tired. This is a game where I've seen enough of a sample size this year where I don't want to hear about last year. I personally can't. You know, the first month of the season, you can lean into, well, CJ was great last year, and this offensive line was great last year, and Bobby Slowick was great last year, and Dalton Schultz was great last year, and all these guys were great last year. Now we're into, hey, this is a new year, and we've seen 7 football games, and it's the same story, just a better opponent. It's the same, boy, we just, you know, we didn't have our best game. We got to improve here. We got to be better here. When you're absolutely atrocious in one phase of the game, and it's we're 7 weeks in now. At some point, we got to start looking at this team as you are who you show us you are. I mean, 7 weeks of we've got to improve. We've got to be better. We've got to do this. We've got to do that. And at what point do you say, okay, you got to put it together? At some point, we got to start seeing something come together, and you play better, and as a whole, you play better, and you put a more convincing package, a product on the field. I just can't keep leaning into, boy, the defense is really good, and CJ and this receiving corps is really good, and this offensive line was really good last year. Like, I just can't lean. This offensive line has been awful this year in pass protection more times than not. And they have been dominated, smothered offensively versus the two best opponents they've played this year.
Well, let's go right there. Offensive line, do you think yesterday was an awful performance? Or do you, like, yesterday obviously was an awful performance. Do you think it was just an awful performance, or do you think they are awful as an offensive line?
I think as a pass protecting offense, I think they're awful. I think yesterday is a sign of the offensive line physically got beat across the board, not just one guy, and we need to include the tight ends in this as well. They physically got their ass whooped multiple times. There was multiple times where clearly they didn't know who, the plan was bad, the communication was bad, they didn't know who was coming. There was never any adjustment made from what they were doing, I guess because they were running the football pretty well, and Joe Mixon was doing some things in a run game that they just kept, that, hey, we'll keep on doing what we've been doing. But I think any facet of pass protection yesterday, and I went back and rewatched the whole game, and I charted the pressures. I mean, it's just unacceptable. The fact that it went on for four quarters, no adjustments, unacceptable. The fact that it was inside twist by linebackers, literally two stand-up linebackers walk up in the A-gap, and
they
one of them
that,
would,
they don't have that TE stuff.
One of them picks. It's not even TEs though, Ron. It's not even DTs.
They don't have
and
that either.
It's two. It's, I mean, it's linebackers my size, Chief.
Yeah.
And they walk up in the A gap and they pick the center off the guard and they messed twice. They messed it up.
Free runners. They messed it up.
Yeah. I mean, it one time it was Kenyon and Juice. The other time it was Dare and Juice. It just. Like, and that happened outside as well. Then you got the tight end tripping the tackle, and then you got the tackle not realizing that somebody outside of him is blitzing when you got all these condensed formations. So I don't know, like, at what point, how many times are we going to watch the offensive line from a pass-protecting standpoint? How many times do we have to see them, like, struggle mightily where your quarterback's running for his life for four quarters before we're like, hey, man, this is who they are? That was the case with Chicago. That was the case with Minnesota. That was the case yesterday. Like, how many games do you watch before you say, I can't talk about what happened last year?
Well, I mean,
and this is who they are.
Listen, the offensive line is clearly one of their issues, and if not their biggest issue. But I mean, still within that, they walked into this week leading the NFL in passing yards per game. Like, I mean, and like, they've been able at 5-2 to hold up. That's just my thing is, with that, with the offensive line, clearly the problem, and I'm with you on that. There has got to be some adjustments made somehow, or these guys up front got to figure it out. Like I think there is some of it is coaching, but also, Clint, as you described, you would expect that Shaq Mason, Juice Scruggs, Kenyon Green, and all of those guys by now would be able to know how to deal with stunts. Would know how to deal, like, yeah. Coaching has got to be, but you would, like, especially Shaq Mason, because it was happening to him as well.
Yeah.
To have to be able.
Everybody.
Yeah, to be able to deal with it. So, yes, some coaching and adjustments need to be made, but I'm not shocked, but I am a bit surprised the complete shift from Super Bowl contender last week to being down. Like, to me, I swear before God, my heart, I understand how bad the offensive line was. I believe if Nico Collins is on the field yesterday, they would win. They would have won the game. I believe they're just easy things that immediately don't even factor into the offensive line. Like easy, just immediate throws out to him where he could gain yards, quick throws, quick stuff to him. And the attention they have to bring on him, they can't just put pressure and just go all out like they did. I think if he's on the field, it's a different ball game. The shift from Super Bowl contender last week after beating the Patriots to this week for some,
we don't like that.
Is wow. I mean, the offensive line was like this last week.
And the Chicago game.
They were Super Bowl contenders.
It's not real difficult for me to get there. Minnesota wiped the floor with you. You played a bunch of subpar teams and won quote unquote ugly and continued to have real struggles that we all look around and go, hey, this ain't, you're not winning. You're not winning if you keep this up. But you won and you're 5-1. So, hey, this was the straw for me that broke the camel's back. And I just can't keep going back to, well, you are 5-1, but all of this stuff is happening. You're 5-2, but your offensive line can't protect, and that's the one thing that made you a playoff team last year with C.J. Stroud. I mean, we got C.J. Stroud throwing his helmet on the sideline because he's so frustrated. It's
never seen him do that.
I never thought I would, but I mean, I never thought I'd. I thought we. I'll be honest with you. I'm upset. I'm disappointed with the ability to be smothered. And I agree with you. Nico would have made a difference. Two things, though. Nico didn't make a difference last year against Baltimore. That's what scares me. And number two is you got a $22 million a year receiver out there. I mean, you're supposed to be a five-headed monster out there, and you had four of the five. And It was as ugly as we've ever seen.
Yeah, no, there's a lot to get there.
Ron, for me, the low, like I thought the floor was higher than that yesterday for this offense. Like how many times we talked about this last night it doesn't matter why it happened or how it happened. They got smothered, right? When was the last time you saw, and maybe it has, you know him better than anybody I know. When was the last time you saw Pat Mahomes throw for 10 completions for 86 yards?
He was pretty close yesterday. He had 154 yards. I mean, there have been some times where it hadn't looked like that. Not 86.
That's what I'm saying. I think back to all these. Like, it's just, and I'm not pinning it on CJ Stroud. I'm just generally talking about the offense. Like when we're talking like Super Bowl caliber teams, like how often are those guys, are those offenses shut down to the tune of? If after you subtract the sacks, I think it was 150 yards in a game. Like, I mean, they were
bad.
That's
I don't think this is a bad offense, even with the line. I don't think they're a bad offense, and I don't think this is something that will be normal, especially when they're healthy and they have their number one target that just changes the way that you can play defense for the most part, for most teams. All right, coming up as we'll get ready for D'Amico Ryans, we'll hear him coming up and we'll let you hear that live. I want to get your thoughts on this, Clint. It's before we get to D'Amico. Not just him, but overall, do you think the Texans, this was a situation where they were out coached yesterday? We understand how many feel about the line and the offense, but was this coaching staff out coached yesterday? We'll discuss that next.
It's a Shoppers John Deere Reaction Monday on Sports Radio 610. Here's The Drive with Sterner and Hughley.
Someone said, don't even drug test Ron. He got to be smoking crack.
Is that my boy?
The hell, I got to be smoking crack.
I don't think he's crack, though.
No, I'm not smoking crack or whatever Mario Edwards Jr. was doing. I'm not doing any of those. I'm just saying. I did. I guess fair. Hey, man. I ain't gonna lie to you, dog. Hey, man. I'll tell you a secret. Yeah, I went with D'Amico Autry because I fully felt I ain't about to waste no good one on this Mad Dog money that they about to lose.
Hold on, so.
Let me slide into D'Amico Autry. I didn't think they was gonna win that game. And they sit there, and I'm like, damn, these jokers got the lead right here. They got the lead. Come make a play. Now, I tell you what, I am disappointed, and we can get to this later. I do want to get your thoughts about if they were out coached. I was disappointed that, yeah, they had some starters out there, but 5-5 was out there, 5-1 was out there, 2-4 was out there, 5 was out there, and nobody on that last drive could make a play. That part was the one that was disappointing.
What do you think about Derek Stingley being 10 yards off and pedaling near
Romeo
field goal,
Dobbs?
Near.
And that they got him in there to get in field goal range. Mm-hmm. Kinda, it was easy.
Yep.
Easy. That wasn't even on the other side.
You're a Tiger, but now you're a Texan, man.
That fellow on the other side was in there just surviving for life.
This is crazy to say because the defense did play really well.
That's the part I'm disappointed. Somebody go make a play.
Yeah, the defense played really well, and they played well enough to win that game. But in that moment, I've always told that story. I think I've talked about it multiple times with you, Ron. That time I went and watched Kobe Bryant and the Lakers play in Memphis. And it was one of those just ho-hum games until about 5 minutes left. And Kobe stood up off that bench, took them tear-away britches off, warm-ups off. And went in that game and said, give me the ball, get the hell out of the way, and won the game. Like, that's what I felt yesterday with Jordan Love. Like, I felt like on that last drive, like, it is impossible to keep this. As good as they had played, I still felt like.
Well, Clint, he was trying to give it to you.
Oh, you know.
Neville Hewitt almost got to. He almost, that was, that. And then it seemed like he got that first one out of the way. When he got that away, then he said, all right, let me just go ahead and hit my tight ends. Let me just easily move this thing to field goal range. And then when he went over top on the zero blitz,
yeah,
and Eric Murray met them, I'm like, what are you doing?
Yeah, I mean, you just you and I watched him do that and actually complete it for a touchdown. Didn't we the same type deal he tried to do on Eric Murray? Yeah, like it's just And it's not necessarily about the defense, as they were the ones on the field, so I guess it is literally. But it just, for me, it was just a feeling about that game of like one team was very cool, calm, collected, knew what they were doing. Yeah, he turned it over a couple of times, made some poor decisions in the punt, whatever. But it seemed like they had answers when the Texans tried to pressure him with Jalen Petrie and, you know, from depth. Boy, they just threw a slant right behind him. There were several times where, you know, he processed everything up front and just got a hat for a hat and then threw the ball down the field. It just seemed like, although the scoreboard was close, it just seemed
they handled the pressure much better.
Yes, no, and they applied it better on the defensive side of the football. Offensively, they handled it better. Offensively, they adjusted. Coming out of halftime, the Texans go three and out and give up a damn sack on third and four, third and six, whatever it was. They get the ball and they march right down the field easy as ever and get a touchdown right there. I felt like that was that team was just much more prepared in the moment.
I'm going to get your thoughts on this because Champ, our guy, Champ Sly, said 1,000% they were outcoached in this game. Did you come away from that thinking that they were outcoached, that Matt LaFleur and his staff outcoached D'Amico Ryans and their staff?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I thought, and really on the offensive side of the football, if you're talking Matt LaFleur versus Bobby Slowick, it's a landslide LaFleur. I think defensively it was impressive on both sides. Because, look, we got to take into account, as you mentioned in the first segment, that D'Amico was playing with what's he down? Four starters? One, two, three, four. Yeah, four, five, counting Jimmy Ward, five starters.
All right, Jimmy Ward, if you count Christian Harris.
You start counting Christian Harris, hell, it's more than that. So, yeah, but, I mean, like, you got to take into account, and they were able to hang on to the rope and give this team an opportunity to win. But still, just the way in which Green Bay was able to get pressure, and like I said, there's a difference between, like, for instance, like the Texans lining up and Will Anderson just creating havoc and wrecking shop, and just ain't nothing you can do about it. Yeah.
Gary had those moments a couple of times.
Yes, Gary did. They did it across the board, though. They did it with inside linebackers in the A gaps. They did it with DTs, TE stunt on one end, a TE stunt on the other end. They did it with bunching the line of scrimmage and bringing random heads and dropping other helmets, and Texans didn't know what to do. Like, they just, the fact that Green Bay made one of the best quarterbacks and one of the more explosive offenses in the game look like completely overwhelmed was that defensive effort, to me, trumps what D'Amico and the Texans were able to do as well.
Yeah, yeah. And
situationally, we can get into that at some point.
No, yeah, we can. Like, as we wait for D'Amico to go, that's another part of it. There were a couple of moments towards the end of the game how that was handled with clock management. And I know a lot of people are talking about that the play that at least some thought it was there to take a look if it was a lateral or not. That then the touchdown by Wicks, you know, came right after it.
Yeah,
like those were two plays end of the game, and that where I think a lot of people are looking at the head coach, D'Amico Ryans, how they ran that.
Yeah, I think it was a rough day at the office for D'Amico from a game management perspective. I don't even if you look at the scenario after the lateral of you trying to, he's panicking on the sideline trying to communicate guys to either move up or move back, whatever he was doing. Like that whole scenario, the thought of, hey, just throw the review. If you win, great. One, it's a turnover, so the risk versus reward is big, yeah. Right? Hey, and if you lose, you get the timeout, you line your defense up, everybody catches a breath in a critical moment, and you line up and play your best ball. I thought that was a big-time missed opportunity right there by D'Amico Ryans. And I don't care about running the football because that's really all they could do offensively. I don't care running the football late. I rewatched the game again today, and that drive, I mean, they were chewing the clock on that particular drive, running it well. And my problem with the way it was handled at the end is you got D'Amico Ryans in a postgame presser saying we were trying to score, and then you got C.J. Stroud saying we were trying to kick a field goal. I don't have time to really talk to D'Amico, and so, yeah, but we were trying to kick a field goal there. So clearly in that moment, we don't even need to get to a point of what should or shouldn't have happened, what should have been in their mind, but like just the fact that the head coach, the game manager part of the head coach and the quarterback weren't on the same – the same plan of, no, we're trying to score, we're trying to kick a field goal here.
And clearly the offensive coordinator, too.
Yes, absolutely. And to be honest, Ron, that the interesting part about that is we talked about it last night, and in my mind I'm thinking this is a last-second drive. And it's not. I mean, at one point they had 6 minutes left on the clock, and they got two more first downs and chewed this thing up. So you had six-plus minutes of real-time football to decide, all right, now let's get aggressive and go for a touchdown, or – hey, let's just milk this clock as much as we can. Like, you had multiple opportunities to adjust and didn't do it, and your quarterback and your head coach weren't on the same page. That was a bit of an issue yesterday.
Yeah. A lot of things could have been done better for the Texans yesterday, and I think some decisions, as we just talked about there, in terms of from the coaching staff. Adjustments, too. That's something maybe we can get a little bit more there. That is one thing that I think is not just a yesterday was a bad day deal, is their second half adjustments don't quite come about. Like, it doesn't seem like, there have been multiple times this year like, this happened in the first half, what did they do in the second half to kind of combat it? Not much. Seemed like the only thing they did in the second half, which I believe was an adjustment they made in the first half, was let's just start running Joe Mixon. And they continued that. Then the Packers made an adjustment, and then there wasn't much of an adjustment off of that. All right, we'll get out of here so we can get you right to NRG when the head coach DeMeco Ryans comes and speaks. We'll have that for you live right here on The Drive, so stay tuned for that as we expect to hear from the head coach coming up next.
It's a Shoppers John Deere Reaction Monday on Sports Radio 610. Live from the Twin Peaks Studios, here's The Drive with Sterner and Hughley.
All right, let's head out to NRG as the head coach DeMeco Ryans is speaking to the media.
To get physically beat, making mental errors, and not picking up the
line. We have a lot of things to clean up when it comes to, you know, our protection, and it's everyone involved, right? O-line, tight ends, backs, is everybody working together, being on the same page, and just getting it done. Like, we've had multiple weeks where the same things have hurt us multiple times, so we have to get it fixed, starting with the coaches and down to the players of finishing and executing it.
As far as the same things, like, do you, like, personnel changes or just schematic, like, is it just as simple as execution, or if it's been the same thing for a few weeks, do you think
change? Yeah, for me, everything is on the table. When it comes to it, has to get fixed.
Where's your faith mind, Chris Grouser, right now, and being able to turn things around?
Yeah, like I said, when it comes to it, I know how we're coached, what we're asking to be done, and it's not showing up on the tape. So it's not just one person, it's the entire thing. So it's just the entire offense from the top to the bottom. We have to get it cleaned up. Not one person or one thing, but multiple things, multiple issues that we have to get collectively, we have to get it fixed.
Well, the play that looked like it may have gone backwards, yeah, before the touchdown, was there a consideration to challenging that? Did you get info that maybe that was not a good time to challenge?
Yeah, from the guys upstairs, it wasn't, and they thought it was forward. So, I mean, looking back at it, yeah, should I have challenged it? Yes, yeah, it's always, you know, you look back, hindsight is always 20/20. So you're looking back, like, should I throw the challenge? You know, maybe throw it there. So I look at myself, too, like, wish I would have thrown it there just to force them to make a decision.
On the third and 15, the final offensive play, now that you've looked at it, are you still pleased with the decision and the play call there?
Yeah, we had a one-on-one opportunity right there. We had to win that one-on-one opportunity, which, you know, we put Tank and CJ in that spot to win a one-on-one opportunity, and we didn't make the play, didn't get it done.
Is the goal to get out of bounds there, though? Because it was short of the sticks, and it was near the sidelines.
Yeah, the goal is to complete the pass.
Can you get out of bounds, though?
The goal is to complete the pass.
When some of the offensive line struggles, what gives you the confidence that things can't be fixed this season?
Yes, the guys have done it multiple games. We've had a lot of great games where we have protected very well, and we've done a great job of protecting and allowing CJ to throw for over 300 yards in games. So it's not Like, it's not something we can't get done. It's just a matter of us executing and finishing and being on the details. Every single time we go out, it'll always be about us and us executing. We didn't execute well. They made some plays on us. And, you know, they unfortunately there, we gave up some plays that kind of knocked us out of field goal range to take points off the board.
On the offensive line with a lot of the guys talking to them, they were accountable about it. They talked about communication issues. There were a lot of free rushers where you just see a guy unblocked completely. Is it as simple as a communication issue? I mean, obviously physically you guys have a large investment. These guys, you feel good about their ability to block.
Everything's going to start with communication, and it's going to start with guys being clear and concise on what they're doing up front. So it all starts communicating, everybody being on the same page.
Because on the road, I feel like that's when most of you guys' sacks have popped up. Obviously, it's barely a game. You guys had a few sacks that you guys allowed. But at home, the communication seems to be more on in sync. But on the road, it seems like the communication can kind of get a little haywire when it comes to the offensive line protection. How much is the crowd noise factor in? How much is just not guys not being on the same page? Like, why is it on the road picking up the stunts isn't as effective when you guys are at home?
Yeah, of course, being on the road for every team, it's going to be more difficult with the crowd noise. Right? That's why fans are important. They can truly affect the game by creating noise, especially in those third down situations. So we have to communicate in the huddle, get out of the huddle sooner, right? More urgency to get to the line so we can communicate and be on the various looks that we get on third down.
How difficult is it when the offensive line's struggling within a game to maybe adjust things on the fly with the offense, change some of the things that, hey, maybe we practice this, now it's not available to us because we're having a hard time blocking? How difficult is that in game?
Yeah, that's coaching, right? Good coaches have to make sure we make those adjustments and get it done within game, right? And that's where, you know, you separate yourself as a coach, being able to adjust on the fly from whatever you may have prepared for and what is happening right in the moment. So you have to be able to adjust on the fly and get it fixed.
Joe Mixon had a really good game on the ground. What was allowing you guys to kind of get Joe Mixon going, with the offensive line?
And when it came to the running game, I felt like our guys did a really good job of getting good hat placement, hat on a hat. Like, we had a couple really well-executed, well-blocked plays, and it was just showing our guys when we do it right, and we're on the guy we're supposed to be on, like, and you hand the ball to Joe is going to make some impact plays happen for us. And, you know, everybody thrives off the momentum that Joe is able to create, like with his run style and his playmaking ability, right? It's really huge for our team. So, you know, his mentality, how he runs the ball, it really gives us a chance. Now we just have to continue to feed him and continue to be able to clean up our issues, whatever we have there in the passing game, to be able to have a well-balanced offense.
What do you think it will take to get him more involved in making the big plays that you saw from him as a rookie?
Yeah, with Tank, he just has to keep going. I believe in Tank. Believe he'll be able to make some big-time explosive plays for us. He just has to keep going, and he will do that. I have all the faith in Tank.
Like about what Neville was able to do. And even Jake Hansen, you know, replace
him. Neville stepped in and played really well for us. For him to come out that first series, to be able to, you know, start with Petrie tipped the pass, and for Nev to get the interception, man, something we really talked about that we needed that game was attacking the football and taking the football away. And Nev made a nice impact play for us there. I mean, third down, third and one, short yardage stop, he made a play. He was flying around, and he played really well for us. And Jake as well, they did a good job stepping in and filling in and being where they were supposed to be and making some big-time plays for us.
Can you talk about the importance of the college game? Because you sweep them, or you tied for the first one?
Yeah, this game is big this week. We know, I mean, the Colts coming into our house, and it's a game for first place. It's a huge game for us, and, you know, we have a bad taste in our mouth from last week, and so we're excited about this opportunity. And so I told our guys, you can't get up for this game, then, I mean, why are you here? So this is a big game. Everybody understands the impact of this game, and we're excited to move on to this one.
A lot of the explosive plays through the air coming with the tight ends versus the receivers, like only have 34 yards. Where do you think kind of the tight end passing game was successful compared to getting the receivers involved?
We were able to get one explosive there with Dalton across the middle when they were playing three deep. We were able to hit him with an explosive in Cade, got an explosive on a check down. So those guys were active in the passing game. Not, of course, overall, our passing game, it's not a, everybody knows it wasn't good enough across the board. So we have to find ways to get everybody involved in the passing game.
What did you do to
Danico Autry? Yeah, Danico, really. Pleased with him getting back, first game back, first time out playing football in a while. So he's going to take some time to get back, a little rusty, but he'll get back going.
CJ throughout his career has averaged 267 yards passing per game. Obviously, this is the lowest of his career. What do you think was the biggest reason why the whole entire passing attack just couldn't get it going?
Yeah, the passing attack couldn't get going because, one, to start with, of course, protection. Also the routes, like we had some plays, we dropped pass, we dropped the touchdown. It's just overall, it wasn't clean from an execution standpoint, from the route distribution to protection. And I think quarterback was sped up a little bit and, it caused some issues for us.
How much does a game like yesterday stay with you before you turn the page? Or is it always kind of like right there with you knowing what, you have to improve on?
No, great question. I'm done with the game. I just have to come in here and answer all the questions. I'm done with it, and I've moved on. Just give you guys, after you guys watched the film and got all the criticism, bring it on. But it's good. I'm on to the net. All I'm thinking about is the Colts. Thanks, all right. Thank you, guys.
All right, that's head coach DeMeco Ryans. Clint, there are a few things there that came out of that. I think a big one there when talking about the offensive line and the offensive struggles, Clint, he said, and I quote, "Everything's on the table," is what DeMeco had to say when asked about personnel changes and possible offensive line changes. We've got to get it cleaned up. We've got to get it fixed. We've talked about it, and it is not getting fixed.
I agree wholeheartedly, and it is absolutely beautiful to hear him speak the truth and hear the tone that he's clearly disappointed, because he should be. It's unacceptable when you've got that kind of investment in your offensive line. By far, the most invested, whether draft picks or capital, salary cap, by far the offensive line has been focused on and invested in. And when you go out there and you can't do the one thing, which I would say is the forte of your two highest paid, both your tackles. You can't do the one thing, which is protect the quarterback. And I'm not talking about being perfect. I'm just talking about at a clip where you give yourself a chance to move the football and score points. If you can't do that, and it happens for four quarters, and you have no answers, you should be extremely frustrated. And again, you should be extremely frustrated in everybody that's associated with pass protecting. And it starts with Bobby Slowick. It includes the tight ends. It includes C.J. Stroud to a perspective. I don't know how much control C.J. has of identifying mics and shifting protections and yada, yada, yada. But if he does have that ability and they are asking him to do those things and he's not identifying them right, and then after he identifies it one direction, he's not keying the free rusher, anybody involved in this pass protection game should be embarrassed and should be held accountable.
When you talk about that, I'm like, boy, that – it was the big, big hit he took early in the first half on the, just McKinney just blitzing off the edge,
yeah,
just untouched. I'm like, God, he just didn't see him over there.
Well, I'm hesitant at this point. Like, I can't wait to watch this year. I can't wait to watch the All-22 every week. But this week to watch the All-22, to be able to see are there underneath routes? Are there right there? Are guys winning immediately or not? Are guys available for C.J. Stroud and he's looking the wrong direction? Or is nobody getting separation? Are they covering down? And I went back and watched the TV copy and I charted every play. I know the immediate pressure on more than 50% of the plays, it takes everything I just mentioned and throws it completely. Like, I don't care what the receivers are doing. I don't care who's available, who's not. Like, it's immediate. It's right now. It's unacceptable. And this group has to be better. But as we talk about this game, it wouldn't have, 125 yards would have changed the game. Like, 40 more passing yards would have changed the game significantly given how close it was. So it doesn't have to be major, but if I'm anxious to see if there were receivers and targets available and CJ was still trying to drive the thing down the football
field. Yeah, I wonder what he means, and maybe you have a thought of this now, and I'm sure when the tape drops tomorrow, you'll have even a better thought of this. When he says everything's on the table, like when you hear that, you think there's going to be an adjustment maybe potentially to packages or some, you know, someone in the lineup, someone being out of it. I'm just like, what's like, you know, what's the immediate thing that you look at? Like defensively in the secondary, you can look at it and say maybe somebody else, maybe Boyd should be getting a shot with Ross. Maybe there's like it's clear right there. You know, I don't know up front what's like who do you get off the field?
Well,
like, what is the adjustment?
Look, it could be anything, man. I mean, you start with the communication. I don't know if this is an issue, but I know that there were at least two snaps where Laremy Tunsil it helps the guard and then tries to get back on an edge rusher and had no chance. There's at least once where Dalton Schultz helped down on the tackle and left an edge rusher no chance until it's too late and he turns around like, what the hell just happened? Those are all communication. Those are all and the communication typically starts with the quarterback in the center. So you wonder, is Juice Scruggs, you're not going to play C.J. Stroud, so it doesn't matter. Is there a guy in that building over there that's going to communicate better than Juice Scruggs? And would Juice Scruggs be better playing guard where he was last year and him and Kenyon Green kind of battling that thing out? I don't know.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not-so-secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
For the past three seasons of Gone South, we've covered one story per season. Now, Gone South is back for a fourth season, but this time, we're doing things a little differently. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
It's better over here. After investing billions to light up our network, T-Mobile is America's largest 5G network. Plus, right now, you can switch, keep your phone, and we'll pay it off up to $800. See how you can save on every plan versus Verizon and AT&T at T-Mobile.com/keep and switch.
Up to four lines via virtual prepaid card. Allow 15 days. Qualifying unlocked device, credit, service, ported 90 plus days with device and eligible carrier and timely redemption required. Card has no cash access and expires in 6 months.
Where the communication, the break in communication is, but there's clearly a break in communication.
Breaking news from Sports Radio 610 is presented by BetQL. Smarter bets start with BetQL. Download the BetQL app or visit BetQL.com today.
All right, we got some Rockets breaking news. What's the latest?
Yeah, that's right. A little Rockets breaking news on a Reaction Monday. Kelly Iko reporting. Houston Rockets guard Jalen Green has agreed to a three-year, $106 million contract extension, sources confirmed to The Athletic. There is a player option included in the deal, but Jalen Green gets the three-year extension from Houston.
Okay, well, there you go. He gets paid there, three-year, not the full max, but he gets paid a three-year extension. We'll see what they do with Şengün, and if they give him a similar deal or a bigger deal But we knew both of those guys were eligible to get some new money, and it looks like Jalen Green gets 3 years, 106. I wonder how folks are hearing or feeling about that. I am sure you can check out H-Town Hoops as B. Scott and Adam Spolane. I bet you right now I'm probably starting up a podcast right now to talk about this.
I tell you, Ron, the fact that Udoka bought into this, obviously, I mean, speaks volumes.
That makes
volumes.
You feel a bit better.
Oh, hell yeah, it does. Because, I mean, you know, you watch the Rockets. I think the jury's still out on what they're going to do, what Jalen Green's going to look like, and who's going to be the centerpiece. And like you said, what are they going to do with Şengün? But clearly this tells you that Ime Udoka loves what he's seen from Jalen Green and wants to ride for three more years.
Yeah, he had a really, really strong finish to the season, mm-hmm. but that happened with Şengün down and injured, so he gets new money. 103 million over 106, I believe. 3 year deal, 106, I believe, is the deal for Jalen Green. All right. We'll continue coming up on the other side. We do this every week, and this one will be interesting. Grade C.J. Stroud's performance. I am really interested to hear what our quarterback, Clint Sterner, because you've been there. I believe you've been under duress like that before a time or two in your life. What was C.J.'s grade? 10 for 21, 86 yards. No touchdowns, no interceptions, 5 carries, 19 yards. Great C.J. Stroud's performance yesterday as we continue on a Reaction Monday right here on The Drive. It's better over
here. AT&T customers, switching to T-Mobile has never been easier. We'll pay off your existing phone and give you a new one free, all on America's largest 5G network. Visit T-Mobile.com/carrierfreedom to switch today.
Payoff up to $650 via virtual prepaid MasterCard in 15 days. Free phone up to $830 via 24 monthly bill credits plus tax. Qualifying port-in trade-in service on Go5G Next and credit required. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance and required finance agreement is due.
In the fast-paced world of attacking, speed is everything. And that's where the Furon 7 Plus shines. Engineered for accuracy and precision at a rapid pace, it's your secret weapon on the pitch. Experience overall comfort and precise striking, even in the game's fastest moments. The nylon outsole with its V-shaped stud configuration is designed for firm ground, giving you the grip you need to outmaneuver your opponents. Step up your attacking game and learn more and purchase the Furon at NewBalance.com. Oh, oh,
oh, O'Reilly! Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Oh, 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 O'Reilly
Auto Parts. For the past 3 seasons of Gone South, we've covered one story per season. Now, Gone South is back for a 4th season. But this time, we're doing things a little differently. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.